This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Israeli medwit, even 100,000 million kalbas, adding it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It looks as though many people fled before the Dharma talk. This week I was sick quite a bit. My usual affliction of migraine. And as I'm sure you've noticed too, when we're ill, sometimes our apprehension of reality gets burdened in a certain way. And we could maybe we could get angry over the fact that it doesn't really look as though there's no difference between Buddhas and sentient beings. We might get upset because even though that's the teaching, it's like my body mind is in the midst of great discomfort and inconvenience, so maybe that teaching is wrong. Of course, that teaching isn't wrong, not in the least, but its actual meaning is so close to us that it's easy to, I guess, maybe overlook. Just as though something is so close, the easiest thing is to look beyond it, because to look at it, it's like, you can't really do that. So the teaching of the Buddhas and ancestors is, as they say, most intimate. Most intimate. And for that reason, our study is also most intimate, our Dharma study. Am I speaking loudly enough? My voice is a little whacked out from. Hey, yeah, you can hear okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
Mm-hmm. A little louder? Okay. No. It's. Karmic reasons, it's too easy for me to complain, so I try not to complain too much. But yesterday was pretty awful in terms of headache attacks, so it leaves me feeling a little wrung out. So I'll try to manifest a little more energy here. Of course, suffering is also intimate. And with with suffering also, there's, well, it's so close that our tendency is to try to push it away a little bit so we can get a different, get a better angle on it. But of course, that makes it worse to push it away. Because that enforces the habitual frame of mind that there's some difference between me and my suffering. And if the world were working properly, I could remove suffering just as though it were an inconvenient article of clothing. Just take it off and put it in the laundry, and thus get rid of it. However, I don't think that's what Shakyamuni Buddha meant when he said there's an end to suffering. I don't think he meant that one day you'll figure out how to put it in the laundry and leave it there. I don't think that's what he meant. I think he meant that in the intimacy of suffering is its undoing. And in the intimacy of the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors is its power. So our sitting practice is is the ultimately intimate practice or observance. So if you have some experience of practicing in a in a cave, such as we have here, we have our own cave. But one of the ways that the Dharma teaching developed was it kind of got away from the emphasis on the individual cultivator. And I think this was in part because as Buddha's teaching spread, people began to look around and notice how many beings there are. And how, while it's okay to have a kind of a little club, you know, and a little clubhouse, sort of, it would be really good if the clubhouse were big enough for everyone. So I think this gave rise to the Mahayana, the great vehicle. And this is not to contrast in any negative way the earlier teaching, because the earlier teaching gave rise to this view that, oh, look how many beings there are. And they're all confused about suffering. So maybe we should try and get everyone into the clubhouse who wants to, of course. We don't want to drag anyone in. As we practiced back in the day of Shakyamuni Buddha, we noticed that the space of Dharma it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I gave a talk on Monday evening, right at the beginning of this week of suffering. And I don't want to talk about the same thing. I try to talk about the same thing, you know, two talks in a row. But some of you might be interested in that talk, I don't know. And it's available on the Valley Streams Zen Sangha website. And I shared in that talk some a perspective that had occurred to me recently. We know that Dogen talks about the interoperability of time and being. And recently I was thinking about that there's room in there for even a third element, which is time and being and light. So in this talk I presented this impression I had that the universe is actually light. And that the universe is as ungraspable and magical as light is. And that somewhere in there, you could say, in the interoperability of time, being, and light is the the vacancy of suffering. So that is, I know, you know, that's difficult for us. And in a way, the more intense our suffering, the more difficult. It's very difficult to apprehend the vacancy of suffering when our suffering is pretty sharp. It's not so easy. And yet, that's also the perfect opportunity. At that talk, somebody commented at the end. I think she said something about she appreciated the notion or the image of us sitting in the light. And I said, I thought that's very good, but what I was saying was a little different. I was saying we're sitting as light, not in the light. Because after all, if we're sitting in the light, where is it coming from? So that would mean, well, there's a light source somewhere. But actually, no. This kind of light is sourceless light. So to sit as light is simultaneously intimate and I guess it's, I don't know, challenging. People agree that it's also challenging. Because it really does mean that we gotta stop fiddling with stuff. And the human being is nothing if not a fiddler. And of course, if we're suffering, there'll be a very strong temptation to fiddle with our suffering. And we might think that, you know, maybe, well, Buddha, maybe Buddha will save us from our suffering. He said, you know, some funny things that I think were, he was playing to the gallery. He said stuff like, I don't know if this is, I don't remember if this is in the Dhammapada or something, something like, I am your daddy, and you are my kids, and through me are you released from your suffering. Now, he didn't say stuff like that very often. But even there, he didn't say, I'm going to release you from your suffering. What he was saying is that the teaching of the Buddha way invites us into the intimacy of suffering, where its vacancy will be apparent. Chan, or Zen in particular, is a kind of, well, it's kind of infamous for its tendency to manifest Buddha's teaching in a way that is, as I said, challenging, because it is so disarming. To turn again and again to the teaching that between Buddhas and sentient beings, there is no gap. Is to turn us again and again and again I can't say to, maybe in the sourceless light. Again and again and again. Turning in the sourceless light. For instance, Master Guishan asked his gifted student, Yangshan, he said, I've heard this teaching that all sentient beings have is karmic consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental to rely on. How would you prove that? And Yangshan said, I can prove that. And Guishan said, oh yeah, how? So some hapless monastic was walking by, and Yangshan says, yo! And the monastic turns and looks at them. And Yangshan said, this is karmic consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental to rely on. Guishan said, that one drop of lion's milk scatters 100 drops of donkey's milk. So if that little demonstration is lion's milk, it not just invites but obliges us to be embraced by the intimacy of Buddha's teaching. The intimacy of practice and verification. Because after all, sentient beings have nothing but boundless, unclear, karmic consciousness. Well, what are we going to do? Well, I think it would be good if we would practice then the way of intimacy. The way of sitting or standing or walking or lying down with a headache as light. Sourceless. Silent light. Well, gosh, how do you do that? Well, to inquire, how do I do that? Is to turn in the light, as long as you're not seizing upon an answer. To ask wholeheartedly with the whole body mind, headache or not, how do I do that? Is to think not thinking. I'm quite aware that this is, you know, this requires a great deal of trust on everyone's part. But I sort of feel like, man, if you can't trust Buddha, who can you trust? So in a group like this, just a few of us, you know, that sense of intimacy is as I said earlier, it feels like home. But what if it were a hall with 250 people in it? Would I say the same thing? Or would I be speechless? After all, the more people you get, the more, you know, coughing, whispering, checking email, people getting up to get more coffee, and that sort of thing. So a big audience is a little different. It might be harder to extend the invitation to intimacy. But I years ago I went to a talk over at Fort Mason, I think, that Kalu Rinpoche gave, and there's a lot of people there. Maybe 300 people, something like that. And he was instructing us, really, in Mahamudra practice, which is really so much like our own, just really, really like our own. And he would give a little instruction, and then we'd sit. He would give us several minutes, and we'd just sit. And that was as intimate as this. So that means this quiet back there, this intimacy is also sourceless, as is this light I'm speaking of, and has nothing to do with how many or how few people we're with. So whether we are in our cave by ourselves, or in a bigger cave, or in a cave with all beings, the great function is the same. Feel like competing with the furnace, so maybe that's enough out of me, and maybe some of you folks would like to speak or ask a question. Yes?
I was wondering about the idea of life that you were recurring to, and where that comes from. It surely doesn't come just from you, but can you kind of unfold that in terms of tradition, going back, or and also explain, I'm sure you don't mean physical lives, unless you do, but what you do mean by life, I ask closely.
Well, talk on Monday, I pretty much had to say that this is the light that Master Linmind spoke of. When he said that everyone's got it, but you can't see it. If if you look at it, it's dark. You can't see it. So in that way, this isn't the light that is the constant companion of the fleshly eyeball. This is sourceless, dark light.
May I ask a further question to hopefully clarify this a bit more? A root canal, a couple of days ago.
Yes.
It's not always terribly pleasant.
No.
I was sent down to a specialist downtown, and my legs weren't working well, my emphysema was hurting, going up out, it was a strange office.
Yeah.
I was a mess.
Mm-hmm.